Hey, everybody, and welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. I'm taking Eunice's line because I know she normally says that. But we're kicking off our first episode, season 5, where we got to sit on the virtual couch with Dr. Sandra Leon Villa and find some things out. For instance, did you guys know what the difference between a psychologist, psychiatrist, and therapist are? Do you know what the term biopic means? And did you know that you could be a first generation person to not just go to college, but to get your doctorate, open up your own practice, become a bad beep, and really do that thing for your community and providing mental health services? You didn't? You did? Maybe both? Well, check out our next story and our first story of season 5.
At PGD, you're not just a listener, you're family. Is there a career you'd like us to explore or a success story you'd love to share and have us highlight on one of our episodes? We'd love to hear from you. Email us at pgdfam@gmail.com. Subscribe to our show so you can get notified when new episodes drop. Help increase our reach with a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We'd love to hear from you.
Hey, cousins. So our interview picks up tonight because it was night when we recorded this particular interview, kicking off our first episode in season 5. In season 5, think of it as a mixtape session. My 90s and my 80s babies know what I'm talking about like that. And no, for the Gen Y, not 1900s. That's not what we say. We say 90s and 80s. Do not age us. Please and thank you. But with this particular episode, we got a chance to sit down with Dr. Sandra Leon Villa, formerly Dr. Sandra Gray, and talk about just her educational experiences, her residency experiences, her career path, and how she got on the track of becoming a neuropsychologist. And not only was it a great interview, it was just a chance to really sit down and hear mental health from just a different aspect and a different perspective. Mental health is also healthcare. And while you may have heard previous episodes where we had a chance to sit down with a therapist or we had a chance to sit down with a physician, we definitely wanted to kind of comb those streets and find some of the lesser known careers that you don't really hear about. And psychologist is definitely one of those. Now, one of the things that we first did before we kind of kicked off the episode itself is we wanted to find some things out, okay? We did some investigative journalism for you guys. And one of them was trying to understand the difference between a psychologist, a therapist, and a psychiatrist. Because the three are different, even though they all work within the mental health space. They each kind of have their own slice of the mental health pie and are in their own respective spaces and specialties. So, kicking it off, let's talk about the psychiatrist. The psychiatrist is also a physician. They're a medical doctor. They do have a degree in medicine. Okay, so that is a psychiatrist. They are able to prescribe medications, whereas a therapist is not prescribing or even recommending any type of medications, and a psychologist is not doing that as well. Now, the nature of study and the nature of space for a psychiatrist and a psychologist are hand in hand. They definitely bubble over each other. They both study basically behaviors in the mental health process, helping people to learn and understand and handle different life problems and how those mental health issues coincide with that. So a psychologist, though, the treatment that they provide is typically referred to as psychotherapy, also known as talk therapy. Whereas a psychiatrist, again, they can take it a step up because they're also considered a medical physician, where they can, in combination with their therapy, prescribe medication as needed as well. So that's kind of the difference between the two, but they both cover like the same space of diagnosing, treating, and providing treatment plans for those with mental health disorders. Now, psychiatrists is like another additional note. They also focus on the diagnosis of mental health as well as the diagnosis and treatment of chemical imbalances in the brain. They can also assess both mental and physical effects of a disorder. And psychologists, depending on their specialty, could also do the same. So like when you talk about a neuropsychologist, we're talking about the brain, right? And chemical imbalances that could be within the brain. Whereas you might have another type of psychologist that isn't necessarily specializing or focusing on the brain. Now, when you're talking about a therapist, they have different modalities of treatment. So just like the psychologist and a psychiatrist, they're also diagnosing mental health disorders and developing treatment plans. But the treatments that they provide could be a little bit more far-reaching, and they have definitely more specialties. So when I say far-reaching, I just mean that the variety could be a bit more in the type of services that they provide. So it could be play therapy, animal therapy, art therapy, for example, other types of behavioral therapies, therapists, which I feel like therapists are, that's that common term and that common role that everybody is familiar with. Everyone knows, you may see commercials about different companies and organizations that provide therapy services within the area that you live. That's kind of like the one that everybody knows, that's kind of at the forefront, the position of the therapist, right? But they're not diagnosing or recommending or anything involved with medications, prescriptions, nothing like that. If you need deeper evaluation, especially to try to uncover any type of chemical imbalances, that's where you would be referred to a psychologist. And then if there's the possible need or suspicion of medication because of the type of mental health diagnosis, then that's where you're being referred to like a psychiatrist for that. But the therapist themselves is not doing that. So therapists, you can find them in different areas. They might be in treatment centers, group homes, hospitals, offices, things of that nature. Now, throughout the talk that we have, really like a chat, conversational chat, you might hear a term that may not be familiar to you, biopic. B-I-P-O-C, biopic, word of the day. And what that means, or what it stands for, rather, is Black and Indigenous People of Color. So I did want to kind of throw that out there as well before we kick off the episode, just so if you hear the term, you understand what that means, because it could be unfamiliar to you or just not a term that you were aware of is commonly used. But biopic, Black and Indigenous People of Color. Now, while we don't dive deep into anything topic-wise like trauma, abuse, drugs, anything of that nature, we do very lightly just mention those different types of trauma because that is the space for which Dr. Villa practices. So we don't go into anything in depth. We don't cover any specific stories of trauma or anything of that nature. But we did want to just kind of have me put a disclaimer out in the beginning just to make you aware that it does briefly come up, the word abuse, the word trauma, because that is one of the areas that Dr. Villa practices in and that her practice covers as far as services that they provide within the Las Vegas area. Now, as always, at the end of the episode and as well as in the show notes, we'll have all the information tagged for you to be able to reach out to her. Whether you want more information about services you might be able to find in your area, especially if you're a biopic person yourself, Black and Indigenous person of color, or if you are interested within the career of mental health and you want to kind of reach out to her and see if you can gather some more information yourself, she's definitely open to it. And we will provide all of her contact information for you. Now, without further ado, I like that word, ado, we kick off our episode where Eunice picks up and kicks off our questioning. But I did want to just kind of come in, set things up. Full disclaimer, we did have like a little issue with the very beginning part of the audio. Because some of you may be saying, well, why is she telling us about the difference between psychologists, therapists, and psychiatrists? If they ask Dr. Vio, then why can't we just hear it on the recording? Well, you can't hear it because for some reason that part of the recording got a little damaged. So I wanted to make sure that I still provided that information for you guys, did my due diligence, and I wanted to be sure that I gave a proper introduction to our special guest that we had on the show.
So how did you end up landing on, okay, I think I like talking to people. I think I like peeling back the onion and kind of figuring out, and I think I like steering them in the right direction. How did you end up there?
So I really fell in love with psychology when I took, psychology 101 is a requirement, right? It's part of your prerequisites before you go into any major. And so I was taking my Psych 101 class and I was just really fascinated. They showed us a video about dissociative identity disorder, which a lot of people confuse with like schizophrenia, right? Like the multiple personality disorder thing. And I just, growing up in a very like religious household, I was like fascinated, like, oh my God, that sounds like so many things that could be, right? And so I was just really fascinated. And I feel like oftentimes people who go into psychology have like this solid story about why they got into psychology. Like, oh, I have someone in my family who experiences X, Y, and Z, or I did this. But really, at the time, I didn't really fully understand why I was so fascinated with it. And it wasn't until like I was in graduate school getting a master's degree that I really started honing in on what I was interested in and then learning really about myself within that process and understanding some of the things that I had experienced. And so now if you ask me why I got into psychology, it's completely changed, right? It did start off as a 101 class, but now looking back in retrospect, I have a clearer picture about what maybe subconsciously drew me into the field. We all end up here for a reason.
I want to say that's a hazard of the job. Now you have reevaluated your life and your decisions to kind of say, hey, how did I get here myself?
So tell us a little bit about the program. So once you decided that this was the track you wanted to go, what was that like? Did it involve internships or residencies?
So the thing about psychology is you can't really do anything with a bachelor's degree. And I got really blessed to be out here and meet a couple of folks who kind of plugged me in into the mental health system here and showed me things that I could do with a bachelor's degree. But for the most part, you can't really do a lot of that. So it was kind of a no-brainer. Like, you're going to have to go to graduate school to be able to practice, at least at the master's level. And so the plan was to go straight into a PhD program. And again, you know, that first gen experience is kicking in and you're not, like, are you going to move away from family? How are you going to pay for this? Because that in grad school, you're kind of on your own now, right? You don't have that financial assistance from growing up low income with your parents anymore. And so you're trying to figure out how you're going to pay for it. And so the plan was to go into a PhD program, but then life happened. So I wasn't able to continue directly from my bachelor's into my master's degree. I had my first son right after graduating with my bachelor's degree. And so that kind of threw things off track for a little while. I went back and got my master's degree in mental health counseling. And then to, again, go for the PhD program where I earned a second master's in psychology and then finished my PhD in 2016. But so I think I always wanted to be a doctor and I always wanted to get to the testing piece. It was just kind of fascinating for me. But, you know, you make these plans and then life kind of throws things at you. I think the key is to kind of just focus on your plan, regardless of whether or not the progress is linear, because it's never linear, right?
I want to highlight on what you're saying, because that's extremely important, because for some people, they think it's so easy, or they might feel like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do after high school, so therefore I'm a failure, or therefore I'm not normal. And what I want to highlight, and we've heard from a lot of our guests, is it's okay, right? And then not only is it okay not to necessarily know, but it's not going to necessarily be easy. So just because it's not cookie cutter and perfect and it happened this way does not necessarily mean just give up and try something else. And so hearing you share that is just a reminder that it's not always going to happen the way we think it might happen, but still it's completely worth it, because when someone sees you today, they think you've got it all together and everything's like, oh my God, it must have been so easy for her to get there. And that's not the story. It wasn't step A, step two, you know, B and C. It was kind of like the adventure along the way. So I just wanted to take a moment to highlight that. That's important for our listeners to also know that it's not, if it doesn't happen the way you think it should, don't give up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was absolutely hurdles. And I think that, I mean, I didn't even get accepted to the first PhD program that I applied to. And so that was kind of crushing, right? And again, being limited to only certain spaces that you can apply in and not really knowing. Yeah. And I just, even in like high school, not having the option to go out of state, but at the same time, we didn't have money for me to submit 20 applications to different universities. Like, college applications are expensive, and
there's a cost.
And that adds up. And so being low income, that adds another barrier to any options that you could potentially have.
Yeah. Now, was there a time in either when you were pursuing your master's or getting your doctorate degree that you just felt like, I'm just throwing this all out the window. I'm done with this. I want to give up. I'm just going to do something else. Did you have a moment like that?
It was probably during my predoctoral practicum and internship.
In between shows, keep the conversation alive with the youth in your households with our series, The Adventures of Sophie and Olivia, available on Amazon and directly on our website, pgd-innovations.com. The link is in our show notes. Don't forget to check out our merchandise, and we have some limited time gear only that's available this season. Don't miss out.
That academia was not built for BIPOC people or for low-income people. It was built for people in privilege. And I say that because when you're going into, during my master's program, right, even that practicum and internship was difficult because you're basically working for free, regardless of whether you have a work, you have children, you have bills, you got responsibilities. You have to figure out a way to fit 30 hours into your day to and that's the master's. So once I got into my pre-doctoral internship and practicum, I was working like 55 hours a week for free, basically, right? Like it was a little bit ridiculous. And during my master's, I think I was blessed because I had already started my business at the time. And so that really helped supplement some of that. But during my doctoral training, that was really difficult because again, you're working in spaces that weren't made for you particularly, but also trying to navigate life and trying to figure out how am I going to kind of get through this financially and emotionally and still support my family.
Yeah. And then let's add the other layer of trying to explain to your family what you're going through, who they haven't gone through themselves. So kind of having not necessarily moments of isolation, but like, who can I share my story and they'll get it and offer me support, you know, in a different kind of way. I'm sure they were extremely supportive, but it's kind of tough when, you know, they haven't walked in your shoes, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And are there some things, speaking of like during that time period, that you did to kind of help protect your mental health? Because you're wearing many hats, your student, your mom, your teacher, helping them with homework, your cook, janitor, like everything else. So what are some things that maybe you found that helped you kind of help rejuvenate you and protect you in that sense?
I think being able to always make time for my family, but I think emotionally, I constantly had to remind myself of the concept of impermanence. Like, this is only temporary. Like, this isn't forever. And sometimes it feels like you're just never gonna finish. And so being able to remind myself, like, okay, this is my target date. This is when I'm going to be done with this. And just consistently looking towards that, you know, when things got really, really bad, right? Because to a point, I think I was so stressed out during internship that I started, like, developing hives. I started, like, breaking out because I was so stressed out. But I think reminding myself, like, this isn't forever. This isn't a permanent thing.
And that's it. I use that technique and that works for me. I'm going to tell you right now, because even till this day in my job, because always kind of setting myself like, hey, this is the thing that I want to get to, or this is only temporary, or like some people, they plan like mini vacations, right? Like, I just got it 6 months from now, I'm going to have some extra time off. And it kind of just gives you that motivation. And so I find that when I go through something extremely stressful or a lot of work hours, then yeah, just reminding myself, this is only temporary. Like, you just got to get through this hurdle. It makes a difference.
And I do that now. Now, you know, for self-care, I plan some time off that I can look forward to. It's like the light at the end of the tunnel. So, but of course, like prioritizing my well-being, and that was really hard to do though during pre-doc, because again, you're being evaluated, you're being constantly, you know, under pressure to really perform. And I think I happened to be working in a predominantly white space at the time, and I was the only Spanish speaker. And so feeling like I had the bulk of the load of, you know, in Vegas, we have over like 30% of folks here are Spanish speaking. And so being the only one taking all that load for, you know, I can get into all the other issues that come into that, but it's hard.
I mean, you were happy because you're like job security, but on the other end, you're like, oh my God, help, help. Can I get some help over here? You know,
job security, but you're not getting paid during the job. I was literally getting a stipend of $500 every
day. Wow.
That's commitment.
That is.
That's commitment.
That's exploitment.
Well, that is true. And I don't think the stipend is any different now.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think for me, that was a really an experience I really learned from, because now being able to work with students at my practice, is, I'm paying it forward. I'm able to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. And I own a predominantly BIPOC practice, so I'm able to acknowledge, you know, how capitalism and how colonialism tends to seep in even in mental health practices, mm-hmm. and prioritize self-care that way and ensure that I'm not making anybody struggle while I'm capitalizing off of that.
Yeah. How did you narrow down your specialty?
Mm-hmm. So my specialty is neuropsychological testing and trauma-informed work. And the trauma-informed piece was really my first specialty, because when I started my first master's, I completed my capstone on a sexual abuse prevention program. And then in my PhD, I published my research that I conducted for my dissertation. It was on racial and ethnic and gender differences on the effects of child sexual abuse among adolescents. And so that focus came in because, again, as I mentioned earlier, I was really learning about myself, and I'm a survivor myself of multiple traumas, not just sexual abuse. And so not only being able to learn about myself, but intellectualizing what I experienced while also kind of becoming an expert in that field, really helped me understand things from a trauma lens, right? And I think that as BIPOC folks who aren't typically seeking out mental health services, when we do come into a mental health space, chances are we've experienced trauma. And so for me, it's been not only an experience of learning about myself, but also being able to give back and have a deeper understanding for what folks are experiencing, particularly when we're growing up in like low income, predominantly BIPOC communities.
I love that. And I think that you touched on some really big points. The first being the fact that congratulations in your family and education wise, being able to step forward, but also being able to turn your own trauma into triumph and say, you know what, I want to be able to work through what I have gone through, but then help other people. And I think that you touched on some really big points too, because do you find that in the BIPOC community, the way that trauma manifests itself is different than in other groups? So, you know, for instance, in a BIPOC community, this person might have anger issues or appear to be depressed, but really that's trauma. It's just manifesting in a way that is not, that is unique. Do you see that?
Absolutely. And I think that that's why that's partly why representation is so important. And
absolutely,
because when you don't understand
absolutely
the nuances of how trauma shows up, particularly mm-hmm. in my folks and children, then we have run into issues of misdiagnosis, and that happens so much. And so I find myself oftentimes now in my like psychological testing result reports, educating people or getting rid of diagnoses that were incorrect because mm-hmm. someone saw a black or brown kid and misdiagnosed them with a behavioral problem or a conduct disorder, when really nobody took the time to ask questions about the trauma they've experienced. And as BIPOC mm-hmm. folks, we experience multiple layers of trauma, right? Yeah. So, and I think in predominantly white spaces, we tend to think of the big T's, the big traumas, like we think about veterans, we think about wars, we think about, mm-hmm. you know, abuse in general. But for BIPOC, because we are more likely to live in at-risk neighborhoods or go to at-risk schools, we're also experiencing all these other layers on top of, you know, physical, sexual, emotional abuse and neglect. We're experiencing community violence exposure, mm-hmm. we're experiencing racial trauma, mm-hmm. and all of that really compounds, right? And it does show up as anger. It shows up as, you know, recklessness. Mm-hmm. I was a kid who experienced behavior problems during like middle school and the early part of high school. And so I often think if I would have gone to, I definitely needed therapy back then, but if I would have gone to therapy back then, mm-hmm. chances are the clinician would not have looked like me, and I would have walked out with,
oh, who knows?
Yeah. I would have been diagnosed with so many different things when really the root and the issue was trauma.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that observation.
I mean, thank you for sharing that mm-hmm. because, and that's mm-hmm. why it was important when we came across just your information. Like, it was important for us to speak with you because this is the sort of stuff you don't think about, you don't know, we're not as informed as we may think we are. And my hat off to you and for people in your line of work for what you do, because it is very challenging, it's difficult, and then also there's an element of vulnerability that you put yourself out there every day just to get, you know, in hopes that, you know, you'll make a connection, mm-hmm. right? And you'll bring about change. And for that means a lot. And so I just want to say thank you for that. And then I'm learning stuff from this conversation and hearing you speak, because there's things you know and you can't quite put your finger on it, but then talking to someone who is licensed and is well experienced as you are, then it's like they're able to help you and then to navigate and to know that there's people out there in our community that's willing to help us. That just makes a difference.
So speaking of, so now that you are licensed, you have your practice, you're building and you're working with your patients, there's a known that within the mental health community, burnout is real at all different levels. So how do you and your staff work to find that, maintain that balance, especially you between your work and your family life, to not be burned out by the things that you're dealing with on a day-to-day at work and with your patient?
Yeah, one of the things that I learned about mental health practices during my pre-doctoral training was that practices will preach self-care all day. But when it comes to your clinicians, they don't care. And for me to have been working 55 hours a week, making $500 every 2 weeks while my supervisor was probably bringing in like 10 grand a week off my work.
Right.
That is not self-care, right? And the thing that blows my mind is that we have all this, we have this research on how productive people can be on different levels of stress and how much stress is good versus at what point will stress now make you not productive and make you burn out, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, being a trauma-informed practice, it's really important that the clinicians that work with me that we're all self-caring, because we are constantly being exposed to these traumatic experiences on top of like dealing with our own stuff in the middle of a global pandemic, right?
Yeah.
And trying to really like balance everything that's going on. And so one of the things that I've done is decolonized our workspace. And when I say that, what I mean is I have really not, I don't focus on the capitalistic piece, because I'm about paying it forward, and I want to make sure that we're providing great services to the community, but in order for us to do that, we need to be well. Mm-hmm. And so I don't adopt a 40-hour work week. Full-time here is 25 hours a week.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, because honestly, myself, I couldn't make a clinician see 40 patients in a week. I couldn't do that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. I'll be done by the end of the day if I see more than 6 people. Yeah. So being able to kind of set some of those things to require clinicians to take a lunch, because back when I was doing pre-doc, I didn't even get a lunch, right?
That's a big one.
So making sure we're getting basic needs taken care of. If someone's requesting time off, it's not even a question of whether I'm going to approve it, take your time off, as long as you're kind of handling your business. Mm-hmm. And making sure we're taking care of the patients that we work with. But also we do self-care activities. We provide trauma-informed but restorative yoga sessions every month for our clinicians. We do, I do weekly consultations with them. Yeah. So really not just preaching like the self-care, but really, you know, walking what we're talking, and as opposed to just kind of telling our patients, hey, you need a self-care, but we're over here burnt out, and making sure that we're able to kind of plan ahead, take the time off that we need. We're all about mental health days, and you don't even got to explain to me why you're calling out.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, and I know there's many challenges we're facing, right? Many. But what would you say is one, but if you have more that you want to share, please do so. At least one challenge that you guys are facing now that you're taking it to heart, that you want to just really try to tackle and put a dent into it or influence it somehow or just leave your mark. Can you share that with us?
The colonizing mental health. And dismantling systems that continue to oppress us even within this field. I had been the diversity chair for the Nevada Psychological Association for about 2 years until 2019. And I was part of the executive board, and every time I tried to make a change for the BIPOC community or make any suggestions, it was kind of knocked. And I experienced, you know, racism within my own community of colleagues, and when it was addressed, it was kind of brushed off. And for me, that was really disheartening. But I also learned that, you know, this is another reason why representation matters, because if you are touching Black and brown people as a clinician, and you have these racist microaggression kind of ideas and values, then you're really doing some harm to the community. And one of the things that I had been advocating for was to require that psychologists have diversity training as part of our continuing education requirements. So we have to obtain a certain amount of continuing education credits in order to.
Yes,
I love it.
And that they were just like knocking me, and they were like, no, we're going to lose half our membership if we do that. And I'm like, but we're supposed to protect the public. So I decided to resign. And last year, mid-pandemic, I reached out to one of our assembly women here, and I talked to her about sponsoring the bill. And she did. She sponsored it, and it got passed in legislation this year.
Oh,
and so
beautiful.
Yeah, so not only are psychologists required to obtain CEs in diversity, cultural competence, equity, and inclusion, but now so are nurses, so are all mental health professionals, psychiatrists, and so it was awesome. And so for me, being able to kind of dismantle that at the same time while we are decolonizing the way that we provide services, so implementing indigenous practices, practices that our ancestors practiced that were also part of mental health but weren't included because our ethics and theories are predominantly white male driven. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that is music to my ears.
Yes.
And you know, as devastating as last year was with just the racial unrest in the United States of America, one of the things that I do see has come out in 2021 is maybe this push and this of more awareness about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so they weren't trying to hear you back then, but they heard you now, and they're going to continue to hear you.
And
so the time is perfect. And it's like, it's unfortunate that had to happen, but there was lots of people that were trying to say, there's a problem, there's a problem, there's a problem. And no one was trying to listen. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Here we are now, and it's because of people like yourself that's willing to put yourself out there. Because again, there's that level of transparency and vulnerability that, yes, that you do. And I'm thankful for it. Rachel's thankful for it. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm glad we have people like you out there that just represents us, because representation is key. And that is what we're lacking. And we just need more people like you at the front, you know, of the line, kind of saying, hey, we're out here and we need support.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So with that being said, if there's someone that's listening that has always had an interest in mental health, but maybe they're not sure what level of mental health they want to work or where to get started or even where to maybe begin researching, is there any words of advice or anything that you want to provide to someone that might be in that situation?
Yeah, reach out, find a mentor, find someone that, that looks like you, someone that's going to be able to guide you and share or understand where you're coming from and has maybe experienced some barriers so that they can encourage you. And just, as I mentioned earlier, like these spaces weren't really made for us, but I think it's really important that we take up as much space as we can in them until feeling like we belong feels normal.
I love that.
Yeah.
And what about if someone wanted to reach out to you, if they had questions, if they want to come for services and they want to investigate what the next steps are, how can people find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on all social media platforms, Instagram at Dr. Sandra Leonvilla. I'm also on TikTok, same handle, Dr. Sandra Leonvilla. And then my website, you can either go to innovationbhs.com, that's B as in boy, H as in high, as in Sam.com, or drsandraleonvilla.com, and it'll reroute you to the same website.
Thank you so much. Oh, and for those of you that couldn't write fast enough, don't worry. If you open up the show notes within the episode, you will see all of the links that she's talking about to be able to reach out to her. Thank you so much for taking time to sit on our virtual couch and chat with us about your journey.
Thank you.
For the work.
Tune in next week, where we sat down with Dr. Nate to find out exactly what is an oculoplastic surgeon, how do you become one, and what is it like being one? Let's talk about the pros and the cons of this specialty. See you guys next week. And as always, don't forget to think outside the box.